This is Virtual Team 360 Podcast with your host, Colette Schultz, owner of Savvy Subcontracting, bringing you interviews with virtual industry leaders. These guests have used the subcontracting concept to turn their team and time into profits. Whether you're the owner or the team member, get ready to listen, learn, and better yet, implement subcontracting strategies to make the most of your own business.
Welcome, everybody, to Virtual Team 360. My name is Colette Schultz, and many of you know me for subcontracting in the virtual assistant world. I'm on tonight with another podcast with a guest that has been using the subcontracting concept in order to grow their business. I actually first have to apologize because I'm not sure I'm going to get the last name right. So I'm going to say Sarah, and Sarah can let us know exactly how to pronounce her last name.
Colette, hi, and it's such a pleasure to be on. Last name is pronounced Spiker.
Spiker.
And okay. Between you and I argued with my husband for a long time. I was like, that's not how you pronounce it based on how it's written, you know? But essentially, it's like, okay, that's fine. It's your last name. I guess I'll play by your rules. That's fine.
That's right. Well, and Sarah has a really interesting story. She's going to go back to a previous business that she had that she used the subcontracting concept and actually where it's led her today. So I'm going to actually turn it over to you, Sarah. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and about your business?
Oh my goodness, absolutely. Well, first and foremost, for those who don't know me yet, like Colette said, my name is Sarah Oblak-Spiker. In my current role, I as a business strategist and performance mentor, I am the powerful force behind coaches, consultants, and online service providers who are on a mission to, you know, make greater impact, who want to multiply their revenues, create their $10,000 days, and operate from their zone of genius. And that's where it actually comes down to building a team, that we can talk about that. But my own entrepreneurial journey started in 2011. I lost my job the same week I found out I was pregnant with my first daughter, and decided that I no longer was interested in commuting 2.5 hours one way. We just had also bought a house out of New York City. So my husband and I sat down, we ran the numbers, and that was the best option. Now, I was not willing to give up my six-week-old baby to somebody else's care, only to go back to work. And that's probably my European roots. I was born and raised in Europe, and there's a different system. You know, there you get fully paid maternity leave up to a year. And that's the background that I saw, and I saw the benefits. I was like, yeah, I couldn't wrap my mind around not being present for my baby. So having a virtual assistant business at a time seemed like a perfect solution. So that's how I started. Brand new environment. I was very self-conscious about my language and the accent. Although I had formal training in business and some real life experiences, once you're a business owner yourself, everything is so much different. So it was really starting from the scratch. No list, no connections, no nothing. So essentially what I did was, with a newborn in my arms, I signed up to be a president of a networking chapter. So my baby and I showed up every month. We doubled pretty much the chapter in the size within a year. And it was a great networking opportunity. It was great for me to get out there, to speak, to get out of my comfort zone, and to start seeing different opportunities and growth, you know, when you're dealing with women who've been in business for so much longer, and you start realizing that you cannot do it on your own. So the major shift then happened when I found out I was pregnant with my second daughter. I'm like, okay, that's it. With the first one, I was working out of my hospital bed. With the second one, I'm taking 3 months off for my maternity leave. And that really started putting things into the motion to really expand my team, go so much deeper, reposition our services, reframe what we were doing, bring a much bigger clientele on board. And we can go into all those details later. But this is how that building a team actually started.
Okay. So when you started your virtual assistant business, what were your main services that you provided?
This is such an interesting question because it goes back to the whole reframing and the story that I share with my clients and my audience. You know, when I started out, I didn't know any better than to say, I provide virtual assistant, meaning that I handle your admin, marketing, social media, and some project management, to a potential client that didn't say much. So through the conversations and experiences and being nickel and dimed at $20 an hour, I was like, huh, there's got to be a better way to communicate that. So when you start, you know, focusing on the results your clients are getting, not just the benefits, but the actual results they get from your support, essentially what we were able to communicate is that we helped busy entrepreneurs who already had their own teams streamline their operations. We were able to keep them in front of their ideal clients, get those clients on a call with them, and essentially help them double, triple, quadruple their sales. So now, from their eyes, from their position, our service is no longer an expense, but an investment. And it allowed the team also to step in as a part of their team, as opposed to, yes, subcontractor technically, but it was not as disposable as somebody, you know, else might be considered more of a exposable, I guess.
Right. And how many people did you have on your team?
Anywhere between 4 and 5.
Okay. And what actually was it that led you, that kind of gave you that light bulb moment of, I can't do this by myself, I do need a team? What led you to that?
The biggest motivation was the fact that in the done-for-you services, you only have so much time available. So you have to pick and choose whether you're developing and finding new clients and developing relationships and closing sales, or are you tied up in doing the actual work, which can take hours on end. So it was really pick and choose. I was also running the numbers and I saw, okay, these are that's the income that's coming in, these are the expenses. I am nowhere near where I needed to be with my second baby on the way. I need to do something. I also knew that having a baby, mom to mom, is unpredictable. You never know what can happen. Yeah. So just from that standpoint, I needed to have a backup plan as well. So my clients felt comfortable because their businesses were serious 6- and 7-figure businesses. So it wasn't just, oh, well, where is she? She disappeared. Okay, well, you know.
Correct. Yeah, right. And now you must have, do you have education? Do you have experience in the business management or the social media?
Yes. The formal training that I have is MBA degree. However, it was so interesting when I started working, even my first employer that I got a job, who was the first one who introduced me to a virtual assistant, they hired somebody to help with the social media. Social media for businesses just started. So I didn't have much of an idea what it actually is, much less of a big vision of what it could actually become as a business in itself. But it was a great seed and it was a great example and kind of an opening experience, eye-opening experience. But everything else, it was pretty much self-taught.
Okay.
I was thinking the other day, the benefits of formal education, the competitive edge that I have is ability to, I guess, see the bigger picture, much more complex in a way, and then bringing my own experience. But just from the degree in itself, there's so many different things that are happening, especially today when things change from today to tomorrow, that it's pretty much just the hustle that you bring to the table.
Right, yeah. And obviously, when you worked with your clients, they could probably see that you were able to strategize. I think that is a huge part of being a good virtual assistant, too, is if you can strategize and make things better.
Absolutely.
So. Do you happen to remember the first, when you brought on your first team member, what type of services or what you actually had them do?
Oh my goodness, this was such an awkward experience. Because at the time I was really indecisive. I wanted to subcontract, but I was kind of on the edge thinking, you know, I can still do that. I still have time to do that. I'm still capable of doing it. Why would I pay somebody? You know,
right.
All those questions. So I remember I put out an ad that I'm looking to expand, and a couple of people responded, and just immediately, you know, when you go through those responses, you can feel if there's a connection or not. I got on a couple of phone calls, but I didn't think much of any of the candidates. But one in particular actually did follow up, and it was the only one who followed up.
Okay.
I was like, that is actually a quantity you cannot teach somebody. You know, you have it or you don't. And this was really something that I was a big proponent on, the high touch follow up, you know, staying in, you know,
contact.
Yeah, and staying in charge. So we had a conversation. I told her what I was envisioning and what I was thinking about doing, that I didn't even have the complete list of things. So we pretty much just started on hourly basis. I think we started with 10 hours or so, just to get a feel for what it would look like, how it would go. And we worked out really well. And she was really detail-oriented, yet strategic enough, you know, that we were able to communicate really well. Our weaknesses offset each other's strengths, so that was a perfect match there. And then essentially when I started to sign up bigger clients, I think the key thing that happened was that a networker that I am, I already had a network of potential subcontractors. So when a client came with a request, it's like, oh yeah, absolutely, sure, we can do that. And I, while we were working contract with the client, I already had a team in place who could take over whatever the tasks and projects had it happen. And then the VA that I initially started, then she moved into a position of project manager and essentially online business manager while I stepped away for maternity leave.
Okay. Well, and that kind of brings to another question about trying to find subcontractors. First of all, it didn't sound like you got bombarded with too many responses, but did you regret putting a posting out there that you're expanding your business and anybody interested in becoming a virtual assistant? Or if you had it to do over again, would have you just gone out to your network and taken a look at some of these people and what they had to offer?
That's a very interesting question, and there are two ways to look into it. From a standpoint of posting a position opening, it's a great announcement to the public. You know, it's very encouraging to the community of VAs. Oh my goodness, look, it is possible. There's somebody that I've been following. I see she's doing it. I can possibly do it too. So that was one of the benefits of putting it out there. I think it was kind of a 50-50 of people who essentially joined my team. Some came through job postings and some came through referrals. And some worked out, some didn't. And it was both ways. I always reached out to the referral source, was very open with each and every one of them. I was like, oh, that's so great, you know, even if it didn't work out, I'm so great it's working for you. It was kind of a mismatch on my end, but if anybody else is looking for them, you know, I'll be happy to make a recommendation.
Correct. Yeah. And I just had a situation like that too. It's just the project that I did, it wasn't a good connection. And it wasn't either one of our faults or anything, but we just know that we don't work well together, and that's okay.
Exactly.
And we'll both move on and we'll be fine.
Exactly. But it is, I think it's the most important thing in the whole process, is to really understand how you work as a person. What's your communication style? What your strengths are? What are your expectations? How lenient you are to let things slide? You know, because, yes, you can become their friend, but you're still kind of a boss. Your name is still attached to the project. And then, of course, we can talk about technicalities of that later. But, yeah, it was kind of tricky sometimes, because I know I can work really quickly and really fast. So for some people, it was really hard to catch up with me and keep up with me.
Right.
So, you know, when you announce that you are hiring, those are all the qualifications that will need to be brought up in a conversation, essentially, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, to keep these, to keep the team that you had busy, how were you getting your projects? Were you putting out bids, or did you get to be so well known that people just came to you? How did you keep the team busy?
Oh my goodness. At that time, believe it or not, I was so oblivious to any strategic bidding or anything else. It was almost like throwing the darts, and I was so damn lucky that every single one of them stuck.
Good.
But the biggest clients that have ever come to me in the previous business and now, they all came through either newsletter or following through social media.
Okay.
I had no idea they were following. I had no idea they were, you know, in my circles, because none of them ever raised their hand, initiated anything. When they were ready, they gave me a call. They said, one of them said, you know, I've been following you for over a year now. I'm ready. I like what you do. I'm ready. How can we work? I quoted them. I was shaking because I've never quoted anything that high at the time.
Uh-huh.
And they say, sure, great. Send me invoice. They pay the invoice, and then for month after month, without, you know, any issue ever. And I think those are the most amazing clients that you can get. I know it's cutthroat out there, but essentially it comes down to your reputation. Mm-hmm. Also building a network. And be very honest. You know, it's so easy to sometimes slide and say, you know, yeah, I guess I can experiment with this project here. Yeah, I'll take it on and I'll see what I can do. Mm-hmm. If it's not 100% what your strengths and expertise are, what you should be focusing on something else, it might be too big of a risk.
Right, yeah, exactly. So let's talk about the onboarding process of a team member. So I think you said the first one you would bring them on for just 10 hours. Would you suggest doing that, or would you suggest even maybe just a project versus bringing them on, you know, well, I don't know if full term is the right word for it, but how would you go about bringing on team members?
You know, going back to the previous question, the part that I failed to answer, and I'll tie it into this one. I guess it all depends on what you're looking for. For me, I knew exactly what positions I needed to fill to be able to fulfill my client obligations towards my clients. And I also knew within the team what were the missing links. So I was able to reach out to two or three and say, listen, this is the project I'm working on. Are you willing to give it a test run? Right? One was a writer. So I got samples from two different people. I paid them both. I never accepted free work, but I paid them both, and then we decided to go with the one that client essentially liked the best, and one that I loved the best. But that was that example. The other one was, we started with 10 hours, and then we kept going and expanding. That was fine. And there was another one that I actually, for myself, jumped in full, you know, both feet in. Because that was, I think, if I remember correctly, that was their condition. You know, so it's always kind of playing. You have to respect, they're business owners as well. They have their own ways of operating. And I was like, listen, this is what I need. Can you provide it to me? Yes, I can. 3 months minimum. Okay, let's give it a try.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
kind of a as needed basis. It's not like it's set in stone necessarily. It truly depends on the subcontractor.
Exactly. But it was much more for myself, you know, for the work that was done for myself, I wasn't as worried. But for my client, there needed to be a consistency. Even though client never directly interacted with the person, mm-hmm. there still needed to be consistency. And to answer the part about, you know, how to keep them busy, I was really lucky that every single project that I had was on a retainer base.
Oh, wow.
So we knew exactly what the scope was. We knew exactly what the timelines were. And if something came up, we talked about it. Mm-hmm. there were weekly team meetings with clients, there were weekly team meetings with my own team. So we were always in a conversation. I knew exactly what they have going on. I knew exactly who's going out of the office. I knew exactly when clients were launching something. So for weeks in advance, for months in advance, we knew what's going to happen. And that made it super easy. Because at the end of the day, you know, when you're subcontracting, but you don't have the capacity to provide 40 hours of work per week for the person to keep them busy full time, at least try to provide some consistency. So it's not a couple of hours here and a couple of hours there, and then they find somebody else. You're like, whoa, wait, weren't you supposed to be waiting for me? Because they're not going to be waiting around.
Right, yeah, exactly. So it sounds like you share the scope of work that the client needs with the subcontractors, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And it's funny you bring that up, because I had mentioned earlier that there was a relationship with me and a contractor just that didn't work out. But that was one missing piece that was, I think, huge, is I didn't see the client scope. So it was just, I was working one way, but yet the client wanted something else. But if I would have had that piece, I think things probably would have been better. So I think that's really important to share with your subcontractors. And if you don't want them to have to interact with the client, that's one thing, but you have to provide them with a resource of what is expected.
Exactly. I think the most important thing is your team needs to buy into your vision, and you need to buy into your client's vision. So when you deconstruct that, and that's the reason why meetings are so important, team meetings. For example, I would meet with my project manager just personally to go over the big picture. And then we would hop on the call together with all the team members, and we would go name by name. What are you working on? How's it going? What are the setbacks? What are the issues? This is what's expected, you know, for next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Is that going to be a problem? And so on and so forth. They also knew that they could reach me at any time that was needed. And that was, I was just about to go into labor with my baby, my second one. And some issues arose with the content and the, you know, the deadlines and themes and so on and so forth. And I remember I was sitting in the waiting room and we were texting back and forth.
Oh no.
My writer was like, no, go out, figure it out. It's like, yeah, I know you'll figure it out. I know that's why I hired you, because you're so brilliant, but it's my job to make sure that I can help you. And she's like, no, I'm fine, you go.
Please go.
But you know, it was that support. And I got an email from a client of mine. She's like, you know what, we are fine. If I hear from you before your maternity leave is up, I'm firing you. We're fine. Go. I mean, that's the dream come true, probably. But it all comes down to that honesty and open communication and clear expectations.
Right, exactly. And it doesn't sound like you were necessarily trying to find subcontractors that could replicate you, but to complement you. Is that right as well?
Well, that became a tricky part after my daughter was born, because I kind of felt disconnected from the business with two kids. I was like, okay, mm-hmm. The VA part was great, but I really sucked in taking orders. I'm more of a strategist. I was toying with the idea, do I want somebody to replace me, or do I just want to let it go and just have my team take their clients, or the whole, you know, clients go to them, whatever it is. So it was quite a challenge for some time to figure it out. But essentially, yeah, to compliment me, definitely, and to keep me on track. And to say, listen, this is your vision. That's where we're going. This is how we're going to get there. But that was also a job of my coaches, because even in a book that I co-authored a few years ago, I talk about there is I in a team. Everybody keeps saying there's no I in team, but I believe it is, because everything starts with you. You can, you know, mm-hmm. you can't rely on your team and you drag your feet, you know.
Right.
But what I wrote about it there was that I'm a believer that there are two teams. One is a big picture, which means your coaches, your consultants, your strategists, and then the implementation team, which is online business manager, virtual assistants, project managers, writers, whatever, people who actually get the job done. Mm-hmm. And they all I'll try that in English. They need to be in sync as well and follow the big picture, but you also need somebody who's going to call you out and say, listen, this is the direction we're going, what's going on, and somebody brainstorm with, and you have a ton of ideas like, okay, let's put this one on the back burner, let's focus on this one makes sense, this one doesn't fit the budget right now, or doesn't fit the timeline right now, or whatever it is, because entrepreneurs, you know, we always have a ton of ideas
and we can't shut them off. And I think, you know, I think that's one thing, that you know you're an entrepreneur if that happens. And
my goodness. Yeah, you know you're an entrepreneur when it's Friday night and friends are calling you, you're coming out. They're like, nope, I'm working on my, I don't know what.
Yeah, right, you're too excited about that.
And I was like, are you coming? We have a movie night here with the kids. Like, yeah, I'll be right there.
Yeah, right, exactly. Now, it sounds like you kept in a lot of communication with your team. What exactly did you use? GoToMeeting? Did you use JoinMe or just your cell phones? Or what kind of tools did you use in order to collaborate?
We were so easy that it hurts sometimes. Mm-hmm. The only tool that we used was Teamwork.
Okay.
I have all the projects in there. We communicated via email. Each one of the team had their own email address with my domain name. And then just voice over the internet. I think it was Google Voice that we used. The calls were recorded. Mm-hmm. There were meeting notes taken, and they were posted in a Teamwork.
Okay.
Along the way, that was actually something that my project manager insisted on doing, and I have to thank her on that. As we went through the whole process, she created processes and procedures for my own business, for the clients, so the clients got that as a gift. I never had those done before. I was like, oh, that is so smart.
Why didn't I think
of that? Thought.
Yeah, right.
But other than that, yeah, it was just really simple. But there was one thing I insisted on, and that was no text communication with the clients. I wanted all the client communication to be via email. If there was a phone call, email was followed. Mm-hmm. With the summary and the talking points and things that were decided on. So it was always a trace in writing.
Right.
And then that was converted also on the tasks and timelines and so on and so forth. Because I had a conversation with somebody, we were going for a walk, and they kept texting back and forth. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going crazy. Mm. What are you doing? She's like, well, I have a client here, she's texting me, and it's like, whoa.
Right, yeah, and texting.
You keep track of everything. It's like, well, I don't, and neither does she. It's like, okay.
Oh. Yeah. Waiting for disaster, so.
Yeah.
Wow. And then what about, first of all, when you had the team, did you pay them by the hour, by the project, or did it depend? Or even on a retainer?
In my particular team, and I'm going to try to answer that so the audience can relate to that as well. The major objective that I had was there is a cash flow, and that I'm not operating at cost, which means that clients always paid in advance. My team, I always honored the way that they operated. Somehow, majority of them were, one was project based. Pretty much, she was on a retainer since our client was a retainer. And mm-hmm. knew exactly what's going to happen. Another one was hourly, and she would bill me at the end of the month. But I was able to budget. You know, okay, this is...
Right.
Yeah. But from that standpoint, yeah, they were hourly. I never negotiated with anyone. I kind of take pride into that. If XYZ was their hourly rate, great, that's your hourly rate.
Yep.
Never negotiated, well, you know, you're working for me for 35 hours. Are you No.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right,
I want to make sure that they are engaged. They have what they needed. Mm-hmm. They would also get gift baskets and welcome gifts and birthday presents and holiday presents and stuff like that. Because mm-hmm. I know my clients would send those to me. And I was like, wow, I never expected those from my clients.
Right.
I got to make sure I treat my team right.
Right, yeah. Oh, that's sweet.
But going back to the rates, so for audience who's still trying to figure it out, take a look into your own numbers. You know, what do you need to operate? What are the margins? You know, what's the markup that you can add on to what you're paying your team, so you're not operating at a cost? And then figure it out, is it the project based? Is it retainer based? Is it hourly based? What makes sense to make sure that your team is available when you need them? And just have open conversation and put it in a contract and set clear expectations. If you want to be paid, I need your invoice by this time.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's just interesting, because I always suggest, as the subcontractor, I kind of do a percentage of what they charge their clients, but that's, like you said, it's not, I don't have to do it that way. That's just a suggestion. And if they want to pay me by project, I do actually have one contractor that pays me by project versus by the percentage of their client. So,
can you elaborate on that?
So let's, for example, let's say you have a bookkeeping client that pays you $50 an hour. I would take a percentage of that $50 an hour, and as a subcontractor, I would get that income. So then the contractor keeps a portion of it as well.
Hmm.
So you're still making money, and you're paying your team member for getting the work done. So
yeah. However, I think that could get really tricky. How, on the other hand, what is the percentage is not enough for you to sustain?
Right, and that's why it depends on the situation.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. But, it essentially does come down to that. Because some people, they add the margin on top.
Correct.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And actually, I'm lucky enough right now. I do it just to supplement income. I have a outside job. So my income isn't, based on my virtual assistant subcontracting. It's just to supplement income,
mm-hmm.
which I hope that's going to change in the future here soon. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, well, I think you've proven to everybody that it doesn't even take a lot of expense. It just takes some time to think about what you could possibly subcontract out. And it takes a little strategy, but it is doable.
It definitely is. And, you know, if you think about it, let's say that currently, as a business owner, if you don't make sales, if you don't bring in your clients, the worst, I think, the suicide, entrepreneur suicide you can make is, oh, I have 5 clients right now, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. You consistently need to sell. You need to promote yourself. You need to put yourself out there. So let's say that you have 10 hours a month available to do that, right? And just for illustration purposes, you're able to have 10 sales conversations, you close 3, and let's say it's, I don't know, $5,000 a month. If you bring a team on board, somebody to support you, and even if they give you 10 hours a week now as opposed to 10 hours a month, you can quadruple your sales. So now you're going from $5,000 to $20,000 a month in sales. What you're paying your team is a fraction of that. You know, so depending on the services, depending on what kind of team you bring on board, they pretty much pay for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's what I keep trying to tell everybody. We will pay for ourselves.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, Sarah, it sounds like you're not in the virtual assistant business now. Now you have a new business. Can you share a little bit about your new business?
Oh my gosh, we can talk for another 5 hours.
Maybe another episode. How's that?
Well, the interesting part, and you know, I know a lot of VAs who are on the in a transition right now, who started like myself. You know, oh, I'm gonna be a VA because that's the only thing that I know, and then you move into online business management, and then you start strategizing. And it's like, ooh, mm-hmm. that actually feels right, you know. And then they go into transition. Somehow, a lot of them are expected to become coaches, you know. And I can tell you how many clients came to me as like, I can't find myself in the coaching industry. I'm supposed to be a coach, but I'm not a coach. I was like, that's okay. You don't have to be.
Right.
But it seems to be kind of a natural progression. Mm-hmm. So that was also the similar path that I took after that. After my second daughter was born, I found myself fighting postpartum depression as well. It was the first time in my life I was totally out of control. And I used to be a basketball player. That's how I got from Europe to New York City on an athletic scholarship. Yeah, one day I got a phone call. I was like, Sarah, do you want to come play for us? Like, who's calling? I was like, no, I'm not going anywhere that's more than 30 minutes away from home. My parents convinced me to give it a try. I barely spoke any English. I ended up in New York City, and I'm still here 12 years later.
Wow.
So I was always a high achiever. So being so out of control was foreign to me. But there was a moment when I remember it was almost like an out-of-body experience where I was trying to entertain my toddler and put asleep my newborn. And my toddler kept saying, "Mommy, mommy, smile, mommy, smile." And I did not want to smile. And I was like, oh my gosh, what kind of role model am I for these two little girls? And so I started to think about ways to be more present with them and also support my clients and really step into my strengths, which is something that I always have believed in. You know, you have to operate from your zone of genius. Your why might change. Essentially, you want the same thing, but the reason why you want it might be a little bit different.
Yeah.
Priorities might change. So that's how I started to really work my way out of the online business management. I had conversations with my clients. One of them actually was able, according to our plan, was able to hire 4 full-time employees. So they no longer needed us. We were like, awesome, we got you to where you wanted to be. Great. Another one needed to move to the bigger client, to the bigger team. So time-wise, it really worked out. And a couple of them who stayed, I was like, listen, my team is, they're moving on with their businesses. You know, these are the matches. You guys can talk. Some of them still work together. Some of them don't. But it took me a while to find where my place was. You know, I tried the mommy market. Oh, I consult mommy entrepreneurs. And somehow it didn't work. And then I tried the technical approach. I tried, you know, I went through the whole, pretty much every mistake in a book that you can make. How you position yourself, how you market yourself, how you price your services. And I went from, I can't possibly afford you. Okay, then let me double my rates. Okay, let me think about it. Let me double my rates again. Repositioning, reframing, and really focusing on the results. So this is how I got to where I am now, but I didn't do it alone. You know, now along the way, I did not subcontract to get work done. I invested heavily in coaches and consultants to help me get clarity, get the confidence, get direction, and pretty much start eliminating a ton of information that you get from especially online world where everything's at a fingertip. Everybody seems to be so awesome and everybody has things that are kind of a shiny object that you want, right?
Yes, exactly.
And really starting putting together, okay, this is the vision for your business. This is how you're going to get there. This is a step one. Don't get distracted by step five. Step one.
So it sounds like you're really working your passion now. Yeah, you seem to be very happy and your kids are content and you're content.
I am content, and the greatest gift I was given by my consultant was the space to really step up into who I am and the powerful self that I am. And one thing he said to me was like, you are 6'1". You command presence when you step into the room. I was like, It's like, why the hell would you try to small yourself and compartmentalize yourself with somebody else's teeny tiny shoebox? Feed the norms.
Well, good for him.
I can do that.
yes. Can you share where everybody can find a little bit more about you at?
Absolutely. The best way is my website, www.sarahoblackspiker.com, and I will spell it out, S-A-R-A OBLAKSPEICHER. I trust it's going to be in the notes, right?
It will be in the notes as well, yes. And what about your book? Tell us, what's the name of your book that you wrote?
The book was such an awesome project. I was approached in 2014 by Melissa Krivacek. She since then published like 4 more or something like that. I was like, hey, would you be interested in collaborating? We have Les Brown and me and Marcy Locke and a couple of other big people from the industry. I was like, oh yeah, sure, why not? So I contributed a chapter, and that was pretty much, it was a great experience. So it's bold and how to unleash the hero within.
Okay. And I can link to that as well. So, and I just want everybody to know that I really appreciate Sarah. Her and I have kind of been playing phone tag here and there, trying to get this recording done. And I could just tell that Sarah had a lot to offer to share with others how to start subcontracting their own team. And I soon hope to have a little bit of a resource for others in order to let them start subcontracting within 30 days. And so make sure you check out my website at SavvySubContracting.com. And again, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Colette, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yep, and we will have that second episode of going on to more information, too. So, looking forward to it.